perfection is something that's hard to come by, and the Suns did it last week. I don't know what I did last week riding solo. I'd prefer to not do that going forward ever again, but that's cool. We're two in the cockpit this time around. This is episode 12 of the Phoenix Suns podcast here on Bright Side of the Sun. Chris Habas, as always, and on here with me again this week, and I appreciate that because I don't have to ride solo and have to deal with the pressures of being the only guy on the show. Jim Kochenour, back in effect here on episode 12. How you doing, Jim?
I am doing good. That was definitely, I would say, at least a surprising week for the Suns.
Absolutely. So I want to, you know what, I'm going to go ahead and give you the floor. You didn't get a chance to jump on with me last week. We talked to Marcus Morris. It was nice to get to know the new Sun. And so the Suns went out there. I'm going to set the table, and then I want you to run with it. The Suns went out there, beat Minnesota in an overtime game that might have been one of the worst games of live basketball I think I've ever seen in my life. It was pretty brutal to watch that game, but they ended up being the one that won. Somebody had to win that game to turn around and beat San Antonio in arguably one of the better games of the season, you would think, and then beating Atlanta fairly handily. They actually took care of business almost that entire game despite some runs here and there. So they go 3-0. They beat three straight teams, and they end up finishing the week with their first perfect week of the season. This is the first time in the entire season from Monday to Sunday to end the week the Phoenix Suns were perfect. Take it away, Jim.
Well, I think, first of all, we have to give credit where credit's due. And even though the Suns may have been winning and performing to their detriment, they had one of the best, if not the best, weeks of the season. They had what has to be their marquee win of the season, to date at least, and it's going to be hard for them to top that one with that victory against San Antonio. And the kudos are well-deserved. It's kind of frustrating to a certain extent, but what you have is a team that's playing good, and, you know, when they didn't make many moves at the trade deadline, they let Telfair go, but he hadn't been playing, and then they added Marcus. They really basically made an addition, and then that's seeming to help Markieff. He's kind of feeding on that. So the Suns, I think, actually improved at the trade deadline, whereas I think a lot of us were hoping that they were going to regress, that there was going to be some attrition and an exodus of talent, that you possibly see at least Jermaine O'Neal leaving in addition to Sebastian Telfair. So we'll see if that continues to play out this way, to see if they can continue a little bit increased level of play. Obviously, I don't expect them to continue along at this torrid, parching pace that they've set here recently. But you have the guys. The guys are going to play the play. You've been seeing some younger guys getting some more minutes, and that's what you want to see in all reality. You want to see them going out and giving their best effort possible, and that's what they're doing. It's resulting in maybe a result that not all of us would like, because moving forward, looking at the broader picture, you don't want to see all these wins, because you'd like to see them keep their draft status intact and then try to pick as high as possible, because that would seemingly be what's going to help them improve more long-term. But like you said, after that really ugly Minnesota game, which was just a battle of two pathetic teams, at least on that night, and teams that, frankly, neither one has been having a good year, and the Timberwolves have been plummeting even faster than the Suns because they got off to a little better start before injuries kind of decimated that team. Then you had the great victory over the Spurs, and you had a victory over the Hawks, where they managed to close that game out without some of their key players, and you saw solid performances during this week from Markieff and Marcus, as well as Wesley, in addition to some of the play from the usual suspects. Jermaine O'Neal is continuing to play solid. He had a couple good games out there. And overall, it looks like after Lindsey Hunter's tirade that some of these players have become receptive, and they went out there and really put forth a good effort, and it was pretty commendable the way they acquitted themselves on the court.
Yeah, definitely. And before we jump into Smilin' Wes, who has easily become one of the frequent subjects that we discuss here on the podcast, going back to our Christmas gifts and et cetera. But before we jump into talking about those guys that are playing very well, and it's definitely worth talking about, but a couple of things that I actually noticed with this week is that the Suns, and, you know, take these stats for what they are. I know some people value certain stats more than they value others, but the Phoenix Suns went out there, and their defense has been borderline terrible all season. You know, without having the vernacular of Jim Kokenauer, I'm just going to use the word terrible because I don't want to think on a word that's a lot better than that. But they've been terrible. And for this week, these three games against three teams that average pretty solid points per game, you know, the Hawks average in the mid-90s, the T-Wolves in the mid-90s, the San Antonio Spurs actually almost average 105 points a game. They held all of them to about 4 to 6 points below their seasonal average, and they held them to 0.91 points per possession, which means that the Spurs go down the court and they have the possession of the ball, and they score 1 point every time they go down there with the ball versus scoring two or three, which sometimes the games have been like that for the Suns. But I thought that was pretty impressive. They're turning the ball over. They're doing something that they weren't doing at the beginning of the season, which is closing games out with defensive possessions with rebounds, which has allowed them to close out games. Like with Atlanta, you know, you put Jermaine O'Neal out on the court, and he has a great week. I mean, in comparison to what Marcin Gortat did, he had a great week. I mean, he went out there and basically proved that he deserves to be the starter on this team with how well he played. I mean, he was almost at a clip of 15 and 10, which is something that, you know, he's not going to do all season consistently, but, you know, kind of turned the clock back a little bit back to when he was with Indiana and he was their go-to scorer in the post. I think it's not outside of the realm of logic possibility that right now Jermaine O'Neal is the Suns' go-to player on the inside. Goran Dragic on the outside, it's easily Jermaine O'Neal on the inside. So the points per possession, the way Jermaine O'Neal's been playing this week, I think are two very commendable things. I think they're doing great with what those two guys are doing. And to kind of go into with what Wes and with what Markieff were doing and Marcus were doing respectively, those three, you know, Wes didn't tear the world on fire. He put up about 12 points, roughly six rebounds, just under six rebounds a game, shot the ball 44%. In the San Antonio game, all he did really was, the main thing that sticks out is he knocked down the miracle three. And then obviously in the Minnesota game and the Atlanta game respectively, he had little scoring outbursts in specific moments where the team needed him. But Wes, you know, he's doing stuff that the team had relied on Shannon Brown to do earlier in the season. He's had, you know, a DNP coach's decision since the All-Star break. Wes has taken over his spot. Kendall's the backup point guard. Marcus and Markieff float between the three, the four, and the five for those guys. I think Marcus had some burn at the two the other night, which was really interesting when you look at that lineup. That's a whole other podcast when you look at that lineup. But those three guys, and you want to include Kendall in there, those four guys are playing pretty darn good basketball, I would say, off of the bench. And what I like about this team is they're deep, not in terms of great talent, but they're deep in respectable NBA talent that wants to have the chance to get out there and play. So whenever someone's not playing great or someone gets hurt, or someone has to come to the bench because they did something wrong on an assignment, well, Lindsey Hunter at least has the ability to take a starter and take him out for an equal part on the bench, you know, which is part of the reason why the team is 19 games, 20 games under 500 for the most part all year. But the bench has basically proven that, hey, if a starter's not doing the job, throw me in, coach, and I'm going to give you everything I got. And this week they maximized those guys.
Yeah, absolutely. The week wasn't completely without blemishes. They did have that 11-point quarter, which was a season low against the Timberwolves. So it would be kind of remiss for my nature to not throw in at least one captious fact in there in the mix. But like against the Atlanta Hawks, really, the fourth quarter, I mean, who saw this coming just a couple weeks ago? They closed out that fourth quarter against a Hawks team that is above 500. This is not a bad Hawks team, with Markieff Morris, Marcus Morris, Wesley Johnson, Kendall Marshall, and Jermaine O'Neal. And that team played the entire fourth quarter and closed out that game.
Yeah, well, the Kendall out of necessity, because obviously Goran went down. But, I mean, the fact that four of the guys that closed out the game not out of necessity were bench guys, I think speaks volumes for this team.
Yeah, I was just referring to the quality of the way they played, not that they'd necessarily beaten all the rest of these guys out. Obviously, Goran left with a minor injury there, and so some of that was necessitated by what happened in the game. It wasn't that, okay, these are our best five players now. although over the last week, I mean, these guys have been playing like some of the best players on the team. These guys all performed at a high level. And so I'm watching this, and it's like, you know, great job, kudos to the team, and why on earth are you doing this to me?
Yeah, oh, you know, why on earth are they doing it to everybody? Because it's funny that, you know, everyone wants to have their cake and they want to eat it too. They don't want to watch losing games, but they want the team to lose to get higher odds in the lottery. So if you're following me there, basically everybody wants this team to be about 50 to 60 wins while getting a top 10 pick so they can rebuild. That's kind of where everyone wants this team to be, it feels like. But yeah, you're right. I mean, one of the things that I took a look at when you look at this week is that realistically, they played a losing game against Minnesota outside of that overtime. I mean, they pretty much played a losing game. If they would have ended up being on the losing end of the stick, they kind of deserved it with a lot of the things that they did against San Antonio. That's clearly a better basketball team than the best team in the league, so they could have lost that game. And Atlanta was rolling. Al Horford was playing great. They, again, could have lost that game. So they could have easily gone 0-3 this week. And at that point, they would have been 17-42. They would have had the same exact amount of losses as the Orlando Magic, which would have been tied for the last spot in the lottery standings. They would have had two less losses than Orlando, so Orlando would have been that two team. But with the way that Washington's playing right now, Washington's playing like they're out to prove something. You know, they're right now sitting at 19-39. So the Suns, if they were 17-42 instead of being 21-39, they would be secure in the third spot in the lottery standings, aside from right now where they're currently secure in the seventh spot. You know, a loss or a win could move them up a spot or two with where they're at because there's a big log jam. So, you know, if you want to look at it, you know, look at the other side of the coin. Three wins is nice. It's almost like the team threw the fans a bone and said, hey, we're going to go out there and give you everything we got. And if we win these games, this is for you guys. You know, we appreciate everything that you've been doing. And they went out there and won the three games. If they would have lost them, they'd be a handful of slots up in the lottery. Instead, they fall down a couple of slots. But, hey, it's a lottery for a reason. You know, 14 teams have a chance to win it. But, you know, the closer you are to the top, the more odds you have. And you have the better chance of getting the player that you want, the guy that you for sure see as being a part of your future. So there is the other side of the coin. You're correct. A lot of fans are probably very upset at the fact that they went 3-0 instead of going 0-3, and you know now they're a couple of games better than what they could have, should have, would have been in those fans' eyes.
The way I was looking at it was like, go Suns, this is awesome, now quit it right away. The win against Minnesota's been plummeting like a stone. They've been plummeting worse than a stone, like a boulder. They are defying the law of gravity by falling quicker than you should on the planet Earth. But so the Suns actually have a good chance to catch them. The Suns are only two games behind Minnesota in the loss column. Minnesota's terrible. So I would almost put money on the fact that Minnesota will finish below Phoenix at this point. If the Suns, if they, it looks like the worst they could do is probably eighth. But like you were mentioning, the difference between third and eighth is just monumental in terms of your odds of winning the lottery, even if you don't win, getting a better player, being in the top five historically gives you a much better chance at drafting a franchise player or a multiple all-star type of player, even if it's not necessarily a franchise player. So they're flirting with disaster with some of that. So the wins are nice. It was a good week, and hopefully they can get back to what has been more of a typical Suns basketball so far this season. But I guess with the play, maybe what we're seeing is that the culture change is complete, that Lance Blanks was right, the soil's now fertile, they're growing all these young players, and we may not need that lottery pick because Wesley Johnson and the Morris twins and Kendall Marshall are our future, and they're going to lead us to the next championship.
Very possible. Very possible. But, you know, if you look at history, in one respect, is it's about every 15 to 18 years the Suns make it to an NBA Finals or have that appearance. So the last time was 93. It you know, it feels like we're due. They missed their opportunity over the last 3 years of having that 15 to 20 year annual thing where they get themselves into the finals and unfortunately lost the last two, but hey, getting there is getting there. You know, you mentioned Minnesota. outside of Charlotte, who they were 7-6 at one point, folks. So if you're listening to this and you can do math, they were 7-6 at one point. They've got 13 wins right now, Charlotte did. So other than Charlotte and Orlando, who have completely plummeted, both of them at one point early in the season were over 500. Minnesota is right there with them in terms of futility over the past 25 games. I mean, Minnesota's gone 5-22 in their last 27 games since they were 15-15. So they were a 500 ball club. They were a potential playoff team. And this was before Kevin Love and before Ricky Rubio came back. They were playing with Kevin Love and 15 point guards that are 6'3 and under, and they were winning games. So, you know, those teams are nosediving as hard as possible towards the lottery. And heck, you know, look at Minnesota. What team could use Ben McLemore, who's universally looked at as the best prospect this year? What team could use, you know, a shooting guard more than Minnesota? Obviously, you know, the Phoenix Suns could probably use one, but they've been nosediving pretty hard. A team moving in the other direction. So to transition this to a more relevant Suns topic off of Minnesota, more relevant is the play of the Los Angeles Lakers as of late. Now, me and you were both, for the entire season, we've both been sitting back thinking the Lakers are the Lakers. They're going to come back and make the playoffs. I am of the belief that they might have, it might be a little bit too much too late because there's only 22 games left in the regular season for them to catch up. But right now, they're 30-30. Utah is 32-28. Golden State is 34-27. Houston, 33-28. So they're not very far off of these teams. I mean, these teams lose three or four, the Lakers win three or four, and all of a sudden they're right there. And this is the Lakers chasing you, not, you know, Minnesota chasing you. You're more scared of Kobe when he's in your rearview mirror than you are of probably anybody else in the league. So, you know, the fear might be there with these teams because they're younger and they're not used to being in this position. But the Lakers are charging, and the absolute best-case scenario for the Suns right now, it looks like, is the 14 spot in the draft lottery from the Lakers. Worst case scenario is they might lose this pick. So looking at it from that perspective, Jim, I have my take on this, and I think you differ from it. Do the Lakers make the playoffs?
Over a month ago, on here, as well as in other discussions, I said that I would bet anyone $100 that the Lakers would make the playoffs at that point. And since then, their outlook has only grown more positive. So obviously I'm not backing down on that at all. And if somebody still wants to take that bet with me, it's still out there. Anybody can put that out for me. To go back real quick to that last segment that we were talking about before I continue with the Lakers real quick, the Morris acquisition, I would just say a couple games into it hasn't been long, but boy, is that looking solid. I mean, you get a player like that for nothing. And I guess what we have there is Lance Blank's fertile soil plus Lon Babby's dry powder equals rebuild complete Suns championship. Now, to transfer back to this Lakers topic, since February 1st, the Lakers are 10-4, Utah's 7-7, the Warriors are 5-10, Houston's 8-5. In terms of plus 500 teams, all four teams have basically the same number. It's between 10 and 12 as they go. The Lakers are in the middle with 11. The Lakers and Utah have basically the most balanced schedule in terms of home and away. The Lakers are 10 and 12, home and away. Utah's 11-11. Golden State, especially by virtue of a bunch of more home games, seems to have the easiest schedule. Utah owns that tiebreaker, so that could end up being huge. So that's something that hurts L.A., but with Golden State, L.A. is 2-0 against them, and they have two games remaining. So if the Lakers can take those two, then that could really help them catch up to Golden State. And Houston holds a 2-1 advantage over L.A., but the last game of the season, Houston plays L.A., so they could tie that. And then the next tiebreaker is conference record, which the Lakers have a 3-game lead. So assuming that the Lakers actually catch up to the Rockets, it's hard to imagine that the Rockets will end up catching up those 3 wins in the conference record. So L.A. still has a chance to win that tiebreaker, so you could even envision a scenario where they overtake Houston on the last game of the season. So even looking that far ahead, that could be huge coming up. Now with Utah, their schedule is absolutely brutal in the near future, and then it gets a little bit easier. So they just lost to the Bucks. Now they go at Cleveland, at Chicago, at Knicks, Now, remind you, this is a bad road team. Home versus Detroit, so there's a win. Then at Oklahoma City, home Memphis, home Knicks, at Houston, at San Antonio, at Dallas. So I would bet, again, that the Lakers will be at least tied, if not ahead of them, by the end of that game, that stretch for Utah. And then after that, Utah's schedule gets a little bit easier, so maybe Utah can gain separation or keep pace or catch up if they actually are behind the Lakers at that point, because really Utah has a chance to go like 3-7 over their next 10 games and just give everything back to the Lakers depending on how the Lakers play. I think that if the Lakers win their home game, or the not their home game, but the game against Oklahoma City tonight, tomorrow when you're listening to this, then not that this is any end-all be-all, but they'll actually surpass Utah in the playoff probability Hollinger's thing. And, you know, not that Hollinger is any kind of deity or all-knowing, but really I think that a lot of people that are on the fence or still think that the Lakers won't make it, a lot of people are going to start to get pretty anxious if the Lakers can pull off that win tonight.
Yeah, I would imagine. And again, like you just said, we're unfortunately, this goes up, or we'll be done with this even before that game starts in terms of recording. So that game, but you're right, it's a huge game, because think of this from Oklahoma City's perspective. You have a chance to be the number one seed. You have a chance to, and at worst, you're the number two seed. The Lakers have a chance to, at best, be the sixth seed, at the worst, miss the playoffs. If you're Kevin Durant and you have the chance to take care of your business, it's one game, but you have a chance to take care of your business. You have a chance to knock the Lakers back one more stop there. You can knock them back one more step on the stairs there. Then I think you go for it. I mean, they got to go for the jugular against the Lakers. I mean, if it's the first round of the playoffs and you're facing Utah, first round of the playoffs and you're facing Golden State, or even this young Houston team, despite it being James Harden coming back to town, I think if you're Oklahoma City, you don't want the Lakers in the playoffs, because I've said this from day one. The Lakers are the scariest team in terms of, you know, being a lower seed, and how you still have to beat them four times. I know people are going to go, oh, they're terrible, they're 30-30 this year, but, you know, that's fine. You still got to beat them four times. So I don't think any team, San Antonio, Oklahoma City, they won't say these things out loud, but I think if those two teams, and if you want to throw the Clippers into that bunch, the team that they're scared of the most that would be in those lower level seeds in terms of who has the chance to knock them off and beat them, it's going to be a team led by Kobe Bryant, not a team led by Steph Curry or Ty Lawson, or, you know, a team led by James Harden that's still brand new and kind of getting their groove together and learning how to play winning basketball. So right now at this point, I don't think the Lakers make the playoffs, because, I mean, at you look at Houston and they have four games against the Suns. And sorry to knock the Suns in this respect on a Suns podcast, but four more games against the Suns. So, you know, maybe 4-0 or 3-1 against the Suns in that regard. So you have some wins. They have an easier schedule. Again, only 20 to 22 games left for all these teams. So if the Lakers go 15-5 and all that Utah, Golden State, and Houston have to do is go 500 or a game over 500, and they knock them out. I mean, that's the thing with the Lakers that you got to keep in mind. And I agree with you. I think the Lakers have a very good chance of making the playoffs, but in terms of there's only 20 games left, they're going to have to win 15 to 17 games, arguably right in that range, to surpass any of those three teams. And those teams basically have to be an under 500 club to let the Lakers catch them. I think that the Lakers end up missing out on the playoffs. I don't think it'll be by much, though. I think this race goes all the way down to the final week of the season. And guess who the Lakers play in the final game? The Houston Rockets. So I think, and at that point, I think Houston will probably be like the seventh or the sixth seed. So they'll have a chance to basically say, we win this game and we can knock the Lakers out, or at least crush their hopes in terms of making the playoffs. So I think this comes down to the final week of the season. I'm going to take the other side of the argument based on what I had just said, that I don't think the Lakers make the playoffs, but it's going to get scary and teams are going to start seeing Kobe Bryant in their rearview mirror, and we'll see how they react to that.
Definitely, and Kobe has been on a tear. So probably the best case scenario is that Dwight Howard pouts and quits on his team like the true superstar that he is. And that would be the biggest thing I could see that could blow up the Lakers' chances there. So that's what we want to hope for, because 14th pick, that lottery pick for the Suns, is so much more valuable than the likely 30th pick they get if the Lakers make the playoffs and we get the Heat pick, which is a first-round pick. But to tell you the truth, maybe I could go through this and look at the history of like the last 15, 20, 30th picks in the draft – And I'm guessing that there's about a very slim chance of actually getting a good player at that position in the draft, whereas with 14 picks, I think that raises quite a bit.
Yeah, and I think one thing me and you talked about, because if the Lakers make the playoffs, the Cleveland Cavaliers have the right to, you know, they have that pick. They have the option to swap picks, the better pick between the Lakers and the Heat. So if the Lakers make the playoffs, Cleveland then takes their pick, and then the Suns end up getting gifted over the pick that Cleveland doesn't take, which is ends up being the Miami Heat pick. So this is the scenario for the Suns. You can have a top five pick and the number 14, or you can potentially have a top five pick and number 29 or number 28, wherever the Heat decide to land. But that's basically where it's at. And you do the math and you figure it out for yourself. What would you rather have, top five and number 14, or top five potentially and number 28 or 29? But to switch it up, like I said at the very beginning, and like we talked about last week, we have a special promotion that we're going to be doing here on Brightside for Brightside readers specifically. So I want to lay out the groundwork for this. If you're a Phoenix area living person, if you're in the Phoenix area, then the first person to go into the chat box there and type in if you want to crown them, crown their ass. Again, if you want to crown them, crown their ass, going a la Dennis Green channeling in the former Cardinal coach. First person to type that in the chat box is going to win a pretty nice promotional package that we're doing here for Brightside readers to kind of give back to you guys. Jim, I mean, do you think we should we tell them what the package is? Should we keep this kind of, you know, little vague? What do you think we should do here?
No, let's not keep it nebulous. Let's let them know what the package consists of. That way I think we can get people rushing to their keyboards.
All right, so again, type in if you want to crown them, crown their ass into the chat box there. The first person that does it that's in the Phoenix area is going to win actually two tickets to the Phoenix Suns against the Sacramento Kings. It's going to be fairly inclusive. I don't want to say all inclusive, but it's going to be fairly inclusive. Two tickets, so you and someone else. And it's going to come with a parking pass as well as potentially some backstage passes where you can go down there, hopefully before and after the game, be able to kind of soak in the full experience of going to a Suns game. Been kind of a down season, and you know the readers are the lifeblood of the website. The fans are the lifeblood of the team. So, you know, hopefully this is something we're partnering up with the Phoenix Suns, doing some stuff for local youth, as well as doing some stuff for our Brightside readers. So this is our way of giving back. So first person that types that in there that can actually physically go to the game is going to win those two tickets.
Yeah, I think that these promotions that we're starting up here are pretty cool. It's a good way to help kind of interact with the followers here on Brightside, the contributors here. They're what make this site great. They're what make this site hum and, you know, exist for that matter. The site's here for and because of the readers and contributors on here. And it's also really cool, I think, to be able to help out the youth across Phoenix here. Like you had mentioned there, we're going to some schools and we're rewarding deserving youth, people that are doing well academically and wanting to have this kind of experience, that are fans. And I think that, you know, some of the kids, I think the first one we have lined up is a sixth grade student that's going to be able to have the same kind of experience and, you know, go to the game and meet a player, get a photo autograph, something like that. And that's going to be something that's very memorable, not only for our member here, but also for an impressionable child, and that's going to be a lasting memory. So I'm really happy to be a part of this, and I think we've got a couple of those scheduled for this year for the local youth, and then hopefully, you know, we can do more promotions like this, get some other stuff going, get readers involved, and help out in the community with the assistance of the Suns. And we're also real thankful for them for working on this with us.
Yeah, exactly. And the cool thing about this is, you know, as a Suns fan, it's a rivalry, you know, the Sacramento Kings, and you get to potentially go out there and watch a team that's, you know, they almost are as bad as what we're putting out there right now in terms of just they don't have a clue what they're doing in terms of being a basketball team, the Sacramento Kings this season. And you know what? This may be the last time to actually see them as they're called, the Sacramento Kings. That might be the more important factor here is, you know, getting out there and checking out the Kings for potentially the last time as a Sacramento King-based team because they could end up moving on. So again, if you want to crown them, crown their asses, get that typed up into the chat box, and we'll go ahead and get that out to the first person typing it in there. No contest, no Googling answers. This is about as easy as we can make it, as clear-cut in terms of getting a winner as we can. So real quick, let's go ahead and get everyone out the door here on the podcast and set us up for the rest of the week here. Before we talk next, we're going to have four games go down, two on the road, two at home. And it's going to start off with a game here tonight, actually. The Suns are going to welcome in the Toronto Raptors with the almost Phoenix Sun potential in Rudy Gay. He was almost a Sun, according to a lot of reports. And then after they're done hosting the Raptors, who, that's going to be an interesting matchup, then they go to Sacramento, ironically, to play the Kings out there in the Sleepy Time Arena, or Sleepy Train Arena, I should say. They come home to host the Houston Rockets, then head on the road to play the Denver Nuggets. I can't see this being more than 2-2 at the absolute best, winning those first two games at the best. More than likely going to be a 1-3 week. I see the Suns knocking off the futile Kings, and then that's basically how their week's going to be. I think it's kind of back down to earth and back down to reality for the Suns this week.
Yeah, several of those games are winnable, but you can kind of see it going one way or another. There's multiple ways this can play out. Toronto's actually been playing a little bit better lately, so even though that's a home game, that's still definitely a losable game, I think. The Sacramento game, if the Suns win that, then they clinch the tiebreaker over the Kings and also put them a game further behind the Suns in the lottery. So that's a really big game for draft positioning-wise for the Suns. Then the Houston game, like we talked about previously, that's a game that the Suns really want to lose because that not only gives them a loss for draft lottery status, but also gives Houston Rockets a win to ensure that they stay ahead of the Lakers, which helps the Suns again. So that's a win-win by virtue of a loss for that game. And then the Denver Nuggets are obviously a far superior team, but they play a lot better at home than they do on the road. So in reality, I could see the Suns winning any of these games, but I could also see them losing any of these games. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out. I'm probably going to go with 1-3, but on the tail end of their three-game winning streak, it's not impossible for me to see them beat Toronto, beat the Kings. Now we're on a five-game winning streak going into that Houston. And really, this could be a week where the Suns could go on, a season-long winning streak. This could be an amazing streak based off of that, a great week. And at the same time, completely catastrophically calamitous in terms of their future prospects. This could be a week where they, almost cost themselves several positions in the draft. And, amazing week and also terrible at the same time.
Yeah, a 2-2 week would put the team at 43, or sorry, we'll put the team at 23-41, potentially, if that's how the week goes. The 23 wins, the Philadelphia 76ers have 23 wins, and they're currently right now slotted as the 11th team in the lottery. So that's how bad a five-game winning streak would be for the Suns in terms of the lottery standing. So again, you can't have your cake and eat it too. You want to see the Suns better and progressing and winning here and there, but you also want a really high lottery pick. So it's going to be tough. It's one of those situations, just like last year, where it comes down to, do you get those moral victories? Do you get those real victories? Or do you go out there and just lose games? And right now the Suns seem like they're just teetering back and forth. They have no idea what they want to do. Do they want to lose? Do they want to win? Do they want to play it tight and then, just accept the moral victory by letting those young guys get out there? I don't know. But as Dennis Green said, if you want to crown them, crown their asses. And this podcast wasn't brought to you by Dennis Green, but it was definitely highlighted by Denny, the former Cardinals coach. Any parting shots out there for the Brightsiders?
Yeah, just like you were mentioning, the season has been kind of an identity, searching for an identity, just like the team's future seems like kind of penumbral. It seems doubtful that at times the front office really has a clear direction that they're taking. But what the Suns have done, especially this week and through most of the season, is at least kept things interesting for us. And now, coming down the stretch here, they might make things really interesting. And not only with watching the Suns, but now we have four other teams to watch with the Houston Rockets, Warriors, Utah Jazz, and Lakers, with the battle for the last playoff spots in the West and the lottery implications for the Suns there with that pick. So while some of the casual fans might not be captivated by this, the really hardcore basketball and Suns fans, I'm sure, are going to be captivated by this, and it's going to give them some fun stuff to watch over this last month plus in the regular season.
Absolutely, yeah, we're two of those fans that are going to be captivated and watching the little nuances that are going to be creating a Phoenix Suns team going forward in the next couple of years. So for Jim Kochenour, Chris Habas, again, if you're going to crown them. I don't know what you're going to crown the Suns, the Jester or the Kings. That's episode 12. We'll catch you guys next week.